Srimad Bhagavatam class. Today's class will be given by His Grace Mahavishnu Prabhuji on topic Srimad Bhagavatam 4.4.15. Hare Krishna Prabhuji, you are there?
Yes, indeed I am. Hare Krishna. Can everyone hear me well?
Yes, Prabhuji. Dandavat Pranam. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Guru Maharaj Ki Jai. Thank you. Thank you, Prabhuji, for giving the association. You can start with the class, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuramilitam Nena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Nena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadhamayam Dadati Swapadhantitam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Trishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Guruvani Pracharine Nirvishesha shunyavhadi paschatyad heishitharine Vanchaka putarubhyascha kripasam vibhyayevaja Vaditanam bhavane bhyo vaishnave bhyo namo namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 4, Text Number 15. Pardon me. Yat pada padman mahatam manolibhir Ishevitam brahmarasasubhartibhi Lokasya yad visharchi Lokasya yad varashati charshi shortinas Tasmai bhavandruhyati vishvabandhave Sati Devi continues, speaking to her father, Daksha. You are envious of Lord Shiva, who is the friend of all living entities within the three worlds. For the common man, he fulfills all desires, and because of their engagement in thinking of his lotus feet, he also blesses higher personalities who are seeking after Brahmananda, transcendental bliss. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Ordinarily, there are two classes of men. One class, who are grossly materialistic, wants material prosperity, and their desires are fulfilled if they worship Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, being very quickly satisfied, satisfies the material desires of the common man very quickly. Therefore, it is seen that ordinary men are very much apt to worship him. Next, those who are disgusted or frustrated with the materialistic way of life, worship Lord Shiva to attain salvation, which entails freedom from material identification. One who understands that he is not the material body, but his spirit soul is liberated from ignorance. Lord Shiva also offers that facility. People generally practice religion for economic development, to get some money. For by getting money, they can satisfy their senses. But when they are frustrated, they want spiritual Brahmananda, or merging into the Supreme. These four principles of material life, religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation, exist. And Lord Shiva is the friend of both the ordinary man and the man who is elevated in spiritual knowledge. Thus, it was not good for Daksha to create enmity towards him. Even Vaishnavas, who are above the ordinary and the elevated men in this world, also worship Lord Shiva as the greatest Vaishnava. Thus, he is the friend of everyone, the common men, the elevated men, and the devotees of the Lord. So no one should disrespect or create enmity towards Lord Shiva. We've covered quite a lot of information in the story of Daksha. Here, Sati is in a way rebuking and chastising her father. What we're going to go over is we understand the praises and we know the praises of Lord Shiva, and Prabhupada enumerates them and explains them very nicely in the purport. What I want to touch on today, what I want to go over today, is envy. Explore what envy is, how envy negatively affects our life, spiritually and otherwise, what we can do to overcome envy, and what happens when we overcome envy, and what effect it has on our life, on our family, and on the world around us. Envy can be divided in two parts, if you will. Jealousy and envy. Jealousy is the feelings we get when we see something that another person has, or we see a situation that someone else is experiencing, their good fortune, and we would like to have the same, right? Envy is quite similar. We see something, we see the good fortune of another, and we would also like to have the same. The differences between jealousy and envy is that in jealousy, we generally do not have a very close relationship with the person, or the person and their situation does not infringe upon our personal reality. For example, if the postman has come across some good fortune, and we see the postman once a month or once every few weeks, so we have a passing relationship with them. But when the postman comes and says, "Oh, I won the lottery," we don't generally feel envious of the postman. We may feel a little bit of jealousy in that we wish we could have also have won the lottery, right? So because we have not a strong relationship, with them, there is no sense of envy. However, if there were a stronger relationship, say, for example, our cousin, a family member, has received some good fortune as well. They receive a lottery ticket. They win the lottery. And they tell us about it. Because there is a closer relationship, oftentimes that jealousy becomes envy. So the definition of envy in that case means that we actually wish that our cousin did not receive that good fortune. Are we seeing the difference? In jealousy, we don't really care so much. I mean, we may experience a little bit of jealousy. We may wish that we also experienced the good fortune of the postman, but we do not particularly wish or want for the postman to have not received or won the lottery ticket. Envy is very different. Envy is when we actually desire and wish the other person did not receive or come across that good fortune. Envy happens when we are in a closer, more intimate relationship with the person who's receiving the good fortune, when their reality is more closely connected to our own reality. Then we are susceptible to envy. Then we begin to wish that that good fortune did not occur to them. Rather, it should have occurred to us. This is what Daksha is experiencing. He's not experiencing jealousy. He's experiencing envy. Because Lord Shiva, now his son-in-law, before Lord Shiva was his son-in-law, he did not really care that Lord Shiva was considered a great personality. He did not particularly care whether or not Shiva would stand up if he walked in the room. He would not particularly care about who or what Shiva was. It is because there was a closer relationship through marriage with Shiva that now envy begins to rear its head. So this is the difference between jealousy and envy. The closer the relationship, the more we are prone to envy. Envy meaning we wish the other person did not experience, did not come across that good fortune, and we would like for that good fortune to be taken away. Of course, we never say this. Externally, we put on a big show of congratulating our friend or family member who has come across good fortune. But within, we would have wished, we would have rathered that our friend or family member did not come across that good fortune. What these two things have in common, jealousy and envy, is that they're both based on a particular belief. The belief is my satisfaction, my fulfillment, my happiness is based on my sense gratification. It is based on the pleasure derived from the senses, the material senses, and the material mind. My satisfaction is based on the external reality, the material world, the material realm. Because our focus, our belief, our attachment is to experience some sort of satisfaction from material nature, from our material senses and the material sense objects, that's why jealousy and envy can gain control. It is because of that belief, because of that understanding, because of that mentality, that happiness resides in the senses engaging with the objects. So it is a belief that gives rise or gives place for jealousy and envy to arise. The problem with jealousy and envy is that it deteriorates the ability for the jiva, for us, to experience loving relationships. When we are either jealous or particularly envious, then if we come across good fortune, we feel guilty to share our good fortune because we don't want to be seen as trying to make others envious. We don't want people to be envious of us. We don't want our family members, the people we love the most, to be envious of us, to wish we did not experience good fortune. So it hampers our ability of sharing our good fortune. It hampers our ability to share and our good fortune, to share in a loving relationship. We know from, pardon me, Deepa Goswami's six exchanges between devotees, to give prasadam and receive prasadam, to give gifts and to receive gifts, and to speak confidentially and to hear what our friends, family members, and other devotees speak in confidentiality. We are unable, when we exist in envy and jealousy, we are unable to live these six, or to experience these six exchanges of love with our family, with our friends. And when envy pervades the entire world, what happens? Neighbors cannot experience neighborly relationships. Regions, communities, peoples, societies, countries cannot exist in harmony because of jealousy and envy. And remember this, jealousy and envy exist where there is a belief that our happiness and satisfaction comes from the senses engaging in the sense objects. Now this presents a problem. We are, the jivatma is anandamaya. We are pleasure-seeking by nature. If we cannot experience happiness, satisfaction, by engaging the senses with the sense objects, what are we left with? Of course, we're all devotees. We've been studying Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and we have Srila Prabhupada's books. We know what we have. We have spiritual nature, our spiritual reality. The entire fifth chapter talks about experiencing the pleasure from within. In today's purport, Srila Prabhupada points out that there are the transcendentalists who, being frustrated with material life, seek Brahmananda. Happiness of a spiritual quality, happiness of a spiritual nature. In order to get rid of and to eliminate the environment in which jealousy and envy grow, we have to get rid of an idea. We have to get rid of a belief, of a mentality, a conditioning that happiness resides in our senses engaging with the sense objects. Now, this can cause a problem because there are two ways of doing this. We're always admonished or advised by Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, spiritual leaders the world over, and Srila Prabhupada, to turn within. Krishna himself says we have to look inward and get satisfaction from within. What does this inward mean? What does it mean to get satisfaction and happiness from within? Well, when we look within, what do we see? What do we find if we go within? There is Jivatma and Paramatma. If we are impersonalists, when we look within, all we see is spiritual nature. Now, that's perfectly fine. We see Brahman. That is perfectly fine. That is indeed purifying. That is the first stage of realization. There's Brahman realization, Paramatma realization, and Bhagavan realization. So that is perfectly fine in the beginning to look inward and see Brahman. If we are personalists, if we are inclined in that way, we look inside and we see Paramatma, Jivatma. So the impersonalists, when they look within, they're trying to turn away from this idea or purify this conditioning that happiness exists on the outside. Happiness exists in the senses and the sense objects. They look within. What do they do? How do they connect with, manifest, and experience satisfaction from within? They, I'm sure many of you have heard this, it's soham, right? The meditation soham. I am he. I am that. Sa, meaning he. Hum, I. So they meditate. I am he. I am that which I see within me. Soham. This meditation, it is the beginning of spiritual life, certainly for the impersonalists. Through this meditation, through this purification, what happens? The realization they get is aham brahmasmi. I am of spiritual quality. When they've attained this aham brahmasmi, what do they experience? As Prabhupada says in the purport today, Brahmananda. Brahmananda is entirely removed from enjoyment with the senses. Brahmananda is entirely separate from, is not dependent upon, and is not affected by the senses and the sense objects. So it is a happiness, it is a fulfillment that is completely independent of material nature. Therefore, jealousy and envy cannot exist. So the Brahmanandis, those who have Brahman realization, they are free of jealousy and envy. Those who have realized Brahman are free from jealousy and envy because they're situated in Brahman. They experience Brahmananda. For us, the personalists, we look within, we are inclined towards a personal understanding of the Supreme. So instead of soham, for Vaishnavas, it is like Dhruva Maharaj, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. It is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It is a personal inclination that we have. So our meditation is of a personal quality. Through our purification, the purification of the personalists, what happens? What realization do we get? Aham dasosmi. I am a servant. Whereas the Brahmanandis, their realization is aham brahmasmi. For us, our realization is aham dasosmi. Dasosmi is I am the servant. And we know there cannot be service without love. The very definition of service means love. Without love, it's not service. It's slavery. Without love, any work we do is a contractual agreement. It is employment. It's a salaried position. It is bartering. But it's not service. Service we do voluntarily. Service we do without hesitation. Service we do ceaselessly, and we do so because we love. So when we have this realization of aham dasosmi, that is a relationship of love. So what do we experience? The impersonalists experience brahmananda. The personalists experience premananda, the joy of pure spiritual love. Where there is premananda, when we exist in premananda, premananda is independent of the material senses and sense objects. Premananda is independent of our external material reality. Premananda is not affected by, is not controlled by, has nothing to do with our material reality. Premananda, where premananda exists, envy and jealousy cannot. So whether it is premananda or brahmananda, when we are in that condition, when we're in that realization and that maturity and that experience of brahmananda and premananda, either of them, envy, jealousy cannot exist. Because envy and jealousy exist only in a mentality, in a conditioning, which is predicated upon living and trying to experience happiness through the senses and the sense objects. Premananda and Brahmananda are completely independent of the senses and the sense objects. Now the question is, how? How do we come to premananda? This is both the hard part and the easy part. It's the easy part because we already know the answer. It's difficult because it requires practice. Arjuna has already asked this question. How? It is a change of consciousness. When Srila Prabhupada called it the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, it is the perfect name for addressing the situation that we find ourselves in, that we, the world, find ourselves in. It is Krishna consciousness. It can be no more straightforward than that. It is not some amorphous, new age, fuzzy kind of, you know, word jugglery. It's very simple. Being conscious of Krishna. How to do it? You sit down and you do it. It's no more complicated than that. It was actually this here in the United States. Those of you who are here in the United States, you know that there's the Star Wars movie is coming up. I know this is a Bhagavatam class, but please bear with me. And one of the Star Wars movies, those of you who may have seen the Yoda, I guess you could call him the guru. He tells the disciple, Luke Skywalker, either you do or you do not. There is no try. It is the same thing. Either we do, we become conscious of Krishna, or we are not. There's no in between. There's no ambiguity. There is no try. You either do it or you don't. Of course, the problem is that we are not used to it. Arjuna says, Krishna, controlling the mind is near impossible. Krishna says, well, too bad. It is possible by suitable practice and detachment. Practice means, well, practice. Detachment means even when there's difficulty, you keep practicing. So Krishna consciousness, to get to premananda, we no longer need to talk about brahmananda because no one on this call are brahmanandis, right? I'm assuming we're all premanandis here or attempting to be premanandis. So we'll leave Brahmananda alone. To experience and come to the realization of Premananda requires a change of consciousness, becoming Krishna conscious. And we are either conscious of Krishna or we are not. It requires continued practice because we must understand, that we have been conditioned with this idea that happiness involves the senses engaging with the sense objects. We've had this conditioning not for one life, but for many, many, dozens upon dozens upon hundreds, even thousands, countless lives. We have no idea how long we have been under this conditioning that happiness can only be derived from the sense of engaging with the sense objects. Even in this life, from the moment we were born, what was the first thing we got? Our parents put a pacifier in our mouth. When we started to cry, when we were upset, the first thing you do, you put a pacifier in the baby's mouth. So even in this life, if this were the only life we've experienced, we know that's not true, but just for the sake of the discussion, all we know is that when we want satisfaction, fulfillment, pleasure, and happiness, gratify the senses. That is all we know. So to change that conditioning is not going to happen overnight. I was reading an article recently. I was preparing a class for the Gurukul students, the temple. And in the article, I forget what it was about, the article itself, but at one point it was talking about breaking habits. And apparently science has figured out or come to the conclusion that it takes 21 days to break a habit. That's fine if we've only had this habit for one lifetime, or our adult life, or several months, or a few years. Our habit, our conditioning, has gone on for lifetimes. This conditioning, this belief that happiness can only be experienced through the senses. We have had that conditioning for lifetimes. So breaking the habit is not going to take 21 days. Actually, I take that back. Krishna and the Guru can do anything. By the mercy of Krishna and the mercy of the Guru, anything can be done. And we can reach pure love of God within a millisecond. But like Prabhupada said, that's like getting an honorary degree. Of course it can happen. But really what has to happen is we have to go to school. We have to go through the courses. We have to make the effort. And that's what we're talking about today. It takes effort. Though it is simple, either we are conscious of Krishna or we are not. But making it a habit is the difficulty. We can be conscious of Krishna right here, right now. We can take 10 seconds, and for the next 10 seconds I can ask you, think only of Krishna. My favorite picture of Krishna is Krishna when he's looking out of the window, his little baby Krishna, and he's staring at the two parrots, and he's got this wondrous smile on his face. My favorite picture. Let's have that picture in our mind's eye for 5 seconds. All right? Let's do this exercise right here, right now. 5 seconds. Have a picture, your favorite picture of Krishna, in your mind's eye and focus only on that picture. Go. There. 5 seconds. Now, for most of us, we were able to focus on that picture of Krishna, our favorite picture, and have complete concentration, meditation, absorption on Krishna's face or features. We were Krishna conscious. We were Krishna conscious. We were Krishna conscious. It is that easy. Now, if I were asking to do it for 45 minutes, that's when we have a problem. Forgive me. Digress a little bit and share this story. It was last year we opened the Gurukula in the temple. Last April, actually. And one of the things I had the children do was going to sit down and we're going to meditate for 3 minutes. So I had them sit down in the temple room, face the deities. They had to look at Krishna, not move their eyes, focus on Krishna's face. They had to sit Padmasana, right? Comfortably, back straight, hands on their knees, without moving, without fidgeting, face Krishna, look at Krishna, and just sit there quietly. 3 minutes. It was hilarious. The kids were revolting. I thought I was going to have a revolution on my hand. One of the girls said, "This is child abuse." It was hilarious, right? They were squirming, moving around, coughing. One girl had a habit of cracking her knuckles. You know, every 30 seconds she would have to crack her knuckles and she just couldn't help it. Another one is doing this, another one's doing that. Every class, 3 minutes. 3 minutes. After a few weeks, I increased it. 4 minutes. Every few weeks, I would increase a few minutes more, a few minutes more. 6 months later, they're doing 8 minutes. They're sitting still, focused only on Krishna, not moving, sitting there for 8 minutes. I increase it again, 10 minutes. At 10 minutes, I tell them, now what I want you to do is to count every single breath you take, both your inhalation and your exhalation. Now, mind you, we have not even gotten to japa yet. This is just sitting still, sitting quietly. So I tell them, when we reach 10 minutes, this is 6 months into the school year, I want you to count each and every one of your breaths. Now, this is a whole nother kettle of fish. It was also hilarious, right? At the end of the 10 minutes, they're starting to fidget again because they're trying to sit still at the same time, count these number of breaths I'm having them count. So at the end of the 10 minutes, I say, well, now write down the number of breaths you've taken. None of them could remember how many. They'd all, between halfway through, they lost count. One girl said, oh, no, I think I breathed about 7,000 times. I said, you know, sweetie, if it was 7,000 times, you'd be dead by now. Another person said, oh, no, I breathe only 120. You would also be dead. They could not remember. They had a hard time keeping track of the breaths they'd taken. So this goes on for several more months. Now, at this point, I stopped telling them how many minutes we're going to meditate for. We just had our exams these past 2 weeks. When I was preparing them, I was telling them what they were going to be, what the examination was going to involve. And I said, well, you're going to have to sit and do Dhyana Yoga, your meditation, for 15 minutes. And there was complete 15 minutes. It was supposed to be only 10 minutes. What they hadn't known is for the past 3 months, I had increased from 10 minutes to 15 minutes without telling you. I just never said anything. As they became used to sitting for 10 minutes and gradually increased to 15 minutes, as they were beginning to realize how they could focus and concentrate their mind in order to count each and every one of their breaths, they hadn't noticed that they were sitting for 15 minutes. And they were saying, 15 minutes? The examination should only be for 10 minutes. I was saying, no, we have been sitting and meditating for 15 minutes for the past 3 months. None of them could believe it. Not one of them could believe it. You can go into the classroom now. You can see them sitting there for 10 minutes. Pin drop silence for 15 minutes. They're able to focus and almost pinpoint without any hesitation the number of breaths they've taken for that 15 minutes. When I told them now, how many breaths did you take? Without hesitation, it was 679. Oh, today it was 690. Oh, today it was a little less. In other words, they've gained focus and control of their body and their mind. These are children. So two things we learn from this. One, it can be done. If children can do it, anyone can do it. However, it took them a year to gain control over their body and mind. So it takes time, but it can be done. Becoming Krishna conscious is not easy, but it can be done. It's not easy because we haven't been doing it for so many lifetimes. We've been under so much conditioning for so many lifetimes. So it becomes very, very difficult. Let me just check the time here. Okay. So this is the good news. It takes time, but it can be done. Children can do it. But we just have to become Krishna conscious. Now, we can be in the temple during Mangal Arati, singing the prayers to Krishna and the spiritual master and not be Krishna conscious. We could be chanting our japa 4 a.m. in Vrindavan during Kartik and not be Krishna conscious. We can be on the altar, bathing the deity, dressing the Lord, putting on tilak to the Lord, tulsi to the Lord, and not be Krishna conscious. I'm sure you all understand what I'm saying. It is very simple. Be Krishna conscious. Where there is Krishna, envy and jealousy cannot exist. So when we say, oh, Mahavishnu, I'm on the altar, I'm still having thoughts of, you know, envy and jealousy, of course you are. Just because we're on the altar does not mean we are Krishna conscious. Just because I am chanting, this is very important, just because I am chanting does not mean I am conscious of Krishna. Conversely, I can be in the lab working with various experiments, doing various experiments, and be Krishna conscious. I can be driving a taxi cab all day, shuttling drunkards, debauchees around the city all night, Saturday, Sunday night, and be Krishna conscious, like Srila Prabhupada's Jayananda. So we are admonished to be Krishna conscious. Everything, all the external activities around it helps us to be Krishna conscious, so long as that is our endeavor. So where we are conscious of Krishna, where we have our focus on Krishna, envy and jealousy cannot exist. In the beginning, it's going to be sporadic. We know this. We've been chanting, many of us have been chanting 16 rounds for decades. And it's still a problem to remain focused. But I have two things to say. One, it gets easier. The students in Gurukul have shown us that over the past year. It gets easier. Number two, it takes consistent practice. Once we are in a space where we are conscious of Krishna, envy and jealousy no longer exist, what happens? Love happens. We can share our good fortune without fear of causing envy or jealousy to arise in the hearts of our family members and our friends. We can share our good fortune. We can share our good news with friends and family without feeling guilty for our good fortune, for our good luck. We can be genuinely happy. We can share in the good luck, in the joy, in the events, in the happiness of our friends and family without within our hearts feeling, oh, I wish it had happened to me and not to them. We can be genuinely happy for someone that we don't like. This is another one, right? A person with whom we had a falling out. When they experience good fortune, we do not feel envy towards them. Now, of course, if we were not feeling envy towards them to begin with, we would not have a falling out in the first place. But you get my point. This is how a person can be ajata shatru, without enemy. The Brahmananda and the Premananda are without enemy. They can be happy no matter the situation they find themselves in. They are not controlled by envy and jealousy. When we are not controlled and influenced by envy and jealousy, our relationships become genuine. Our relationships become deep and heartfelt. Our relations with our family members become genuine and deep, empowering, uplifting, and supportive. Our relationships with other devotees in the temple become genuine, uplifting, fulfilling. Relationships all around us take on a completely different nature. And this is the task of ISKCON. This is the task of our society. If we look at the seven purposes of ISKCON, we are not here to sit in the temple room chanting our japa. We are here to change that is a defining characteristic of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. all of our acharyas, from Narada Muni on down to Srila Prabhupada, they all are interested in changing the world. But if we are overcome, we ourselves, as ISKCON devotees, Prabhupada's disciples, grand disciples, great grand disciples, if we are overcome with envy and jealousy, the people we come in contact with will not be impressed with the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Because in their eyes, we are no, or they are no better off, and we are no better off than them. In their eyes, we are struggling with the exact same issues they are struggling with. Our best preaching is to be Krishna conscious, not to teach it, but to be it. When we be Krishna conscious, when we are Krishna conscious, we are devoid of envy and jealousy. And what happens? When people come in our space, when they come in contact with us, they see that we are completely devoid of jealousy and envy. And what happens? Automatically, they are attracted to our loving qualities. Automatically. We don't have to say a word. Because they recognize that in the presence of someone who has zero malice, who has zero envy, zero jealousy. So we have to remember that while, yes, preaching and teaching Krishna consciousness is certainly what we do, but most important is being Krishna conscious. Conscious 24/7. In being Krishna consciousness, the purity that comes with that allows us to experience and manifest Premananda. And where there is Premananda, there is no envy, there is no jealousy. That's how we change the world. That's how people come running, come flocking to Krishna. Through experiencing, interacting with Krishna's devotees who are Krishna conscious. This is how we're going to change the world. So I'll end there. If we have any questions, we can go into questions and discussions.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dandavat Pranam, August, Srila Prabhupada and Guru Maharaj. Very, very wonderful class, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, you were saying even though you are chanting 16 rounds, it doesn't mean you are Krishna conscious. That's what you said?
Sorry, can you say that again, please? I have some construction going on right outside the office here. Can you say that again? Sorry.
You were saying even though you are chanting 16 rounds, you are not Krishna conscious.
Yes.
Is that what you mean?
Yes, that's exactly what I mean. That is not too hard to understand or to experience, at least for myself. It is very easy sometimes. I mean, I've seen devotees, even in myself, who are chanting their rounds while driving a car. They're chanting their rounds while checking their Facebook updates. They're chanting their... How can we possibly be Krishna conscious in that manner? I'll speak for myself, in my own experience. Chanting, sitting and chanting is not enough for me to be intensely focused and conscious of Krishna. Not by a long... I can sit and chant 16 rounds, more than half of those rounds is not with the consciousness focus on Krishna easily. I always have to bring it back and bring the consciousness back, bring the mind back, bring it back. In so many, I could be reading Bhagavatam. I was preparing for today's lecture. I was reading Bhagavatam yesterday. Even while reading the purport, the mind was somewhere else. I was not conscious of Krishna. The mind is like that. This is what Arjuna said. Arjuna says, "My dear Krishna, are you kidding me? The mind is like the wind." Krishna says, yes, it is. Do it anyway. We can be on the altar. I've had this experience particularly when I was serving in the Boston Temple. And when you have responsibilities in the temple, at that time I had the responsibility of the presidency. I'm on the altar doing Mangalarti with Krishna in a very intimate setting with Krishna. And I'm thinking about managerial issues I'm going to have with the contractor later in the day, something that's got to be taken care of in the kitchen later in the day. I am not conscious of Krishna, and I'm on the altar doing puja. It is not enough to be simply physically doing what we call service. Because if we're doing, we talked about in the previous lecture I gave, to do service physically, but not have your mind and your consciousness there with you in the service, seva aparad.
Yes, Prabhuji, really true, Prabhuji. Thank you so
that's
much.
That's my experience.
Yeah. I request all the devotees, if anybody has any question or comments from Prabhuji, they can go ahead.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Please accept my humble obeisances. This is Komodi Kidasi. You've been mentioning, you know, envy and jealousy. So I was under the impression that it's the same thing. So could you please explain how and they can be described, envy and jealousy, separate or one, however. Please, thank you.
I would say they are, you're right. Envy and jealousy are certainly the same thing. They come from the same place, our conditioning, this idea that our happiness resides in the senses, engaging with the sense object. So they come from the same place. They are essentially, yes, they are the same thing. There's only a slight difference in how they manifest. The difference in how they manifest is that jealousy, let's put it this way, jealousy, when we are jealous, we're not interested in depriving the other person of their good fortune. Whereas in envy, we do. We want to deprive, we wish that the other person did not have their good fortune. So it's a slight difference. It's only, the only reason why I describe this difference is so that we can identify in our own hearts what we're going through, what we're feeling, what we're experiencing. That's all. It's just to give ourselves a subtle way, an understanding of the subtle manifestations of envy and jealousy. So they are essentially the same thing because they come from the same place. They are basically two species of the same plant, if you will. So they, yes, they are the same thing, but they simply manifest differently. Generally, this manifestation takes place in the nature of the relationship. Those who, or those with whom we have a close relationship, it's envy. Because oftentimes we tend to wish that they did not have that good fortune that they're experiencing. Typically this happens with those who are closer to us. Friends, families, spouses, children, parents. It's quite interesting. The closer the person is to us, either as a friend, as a family, or in any area of life, the closer they are to us, we're more susceptible to envy where we want or we wish that they did not have their good fortune that we wanted for ourselves. Whereas if it's someone we don't really know, it's someone we just met a few times, they have good fortune, and we're like, oh, I wish I could have had that as well. But we generally do not wish that they did not have good fortune. So it's a subtle difference. It's not really very important to make this difference, only in that it gives us an understanding for ourselves what we are experiencing. But the difference is very, very subtle, and it's not really important in the overall scheme of trying to be rid of jealousy and envy.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Hare.
Yeah, this section of Srimad Bhagavatam, very much, almost every day we are discussing this factor of envy, which is like all-pervading, seems like. But your presentation was wonderful. You said it can be overcome. So a couple of things I wanted to share on this topic, it's okay?
Yes, please.
As you described, Prabhu, this envy and jealousy, yeah, they are the two sides of the same coin. It's just a different perspective. So when we say out of sight, out of mind, you know, even when we pick up jealousy, if it is not around us, it is not, we are not around something or somebody, then it doesn't affect us so much. But envy definitely, when we are with a close, intimate relations with others, that's a factor. The point, how to overcome envy. Now, on the material platform, everything we experience is in scarcity, the earth. So the great fortune when we find that someone else, we think of, but on the spiritual platform, the very definition of spiritual platform means there is no dearth of anything. Everything is unlimited. So in the spiritual world, in Krishna's Leela, even when a devotee serves Krishna very wonderfully or does something, other devotees and other gopis may feel how wonderfully somebody did this. At the very moment of desiring to please Krishna in some way, then the arrangement is immediately made for everyone, for anyone who desires to please Krishna in the same way, because there is no dearth of any means. Everything is experienced, like Chintamani, Kalpasu, Kalpavriksha, you know. So that's why there is no space and time in the spiritual realm, on the spiritual platform, for envy. Because nobody remains deprived of having something in relation to Krishna or that fortune. But on the material platform, everyone may not get whatever they wish or whatever other people have. And that's the major thing. So the only way one can overcome envy or become free from the engrossment into thinking the material platform is through our constant spiritual sadhana and also spiritual imbibing the appreciation for the spiritual nature and the spiritual realm, which we are all aspiring. Because on the spiritual realm, everybody is facilitating others. So only by facilitating other devotees, even on our apparently material platform, we can experience that moment of a spiritual bliss by facilitating others. Because this is the onus on all of us in sadhakas, that we want Krishna to do something medical. And Krishna is waiting for that moment when we will practically, if we have absolute faith in the unlimited nature of transcendence, then how can in our good scruples we become envious of anyone? Because we want to experience the unlimited, so we have to give Krishna the opportunity. We have to create the opportunity for Krishna to bless us with that unlimited transcendence. But if we allow ourselves to remain stuck into envious nature, then Krishna will say, well, you stay here. We have to involve Krishna to experience transcendence. And the concomitant effect will be that envy will have no space, even while living on this platform. Otherwise, envious nature, as you said, the conditioning since time immemorial, it is so deeply rooted, but we have to work out. We have to give Krishna the opportunity. We have to involve Krishna. Okay, please bless me. And for that, we have to serve devotees. We have to facilitate devotees. We have to glorify devotees. We have to bring out our liberal nature How can we not praise devotees? How can I not see that as much as I want to envy Krishna, everybody, out of billions, how many of us are who are on this path of and inspiring and imbibing and aspiring the ideal of unlimited transcendence? So every devotee, I'm talking about envious, the envy among us, the practicing devotees in the temple, around in congregation, how can we not appreciate it? So this should be, rather than why I envy somebody, my question should be, how can I not appreciate this devotee and that and every devotee? Because Krishna loves him also. As much as I want to be loved by Krishna, Krishna also, the other devotee also has the same fortune. So the fortune is unlimited. We have to be able to perceive it, and we have to strike on the hot spot where Krishna becomes involved and Krishna loves. Yes, he is a person who is facilitating others' involvement, others' participation, others serving Krishna. And Krishna says, wow, I like that. So we have to do something consciously, mentally, in speech, and also in action, which Krishna's attention is attracted. Because that is the only way. If we cannot see Krishna pleasing at what we think, what we speak, and what we do, then we are far removed from the reality which we want to experience and realize in this lifetime. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Very, very well said. Very well said indeed.
Thank you, Maharaj. That's what is another question I had. Then before I ask, I've already mentioned and explained it. Thank you very much, Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you, Prabhuji, Dandavat Pranam, always Srila Prabhupada and Gurudev for explaining such a valuable assistance to us. Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, Dandavat Pranam, always Srila Prabhupada and Gurudev.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for the service.
Thank you very much, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.